This is Jordan Seculo. Another federal judge blocks Trump on an executive order, this time on sanctuary cities.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulo Live.
I know you think the president will win this case. On what grounds?
Well, on the same grounds that the court ruled. Ironically, the court agreed with the president's interpretation of the authorities that he's given under U.S. code. I think as it goes to the Supreme Court, they will clearly rule that the president was well within his legal right to do this. I think anybody that's got a basic understanding of the Constitution and of basic reading of U.S. code would come to the same conclusion.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Is the White House overstepping their bounds here on tax reform? And is that partly because of the failure of health care? Do they feel like they're...
This is something we've been talking to them all along. We had a very good meeting yesterday. Our committees, Ways and Means and Finance in the White House, are going to work regularly now to make sure that we get a bill together that's unified. We've been briefed on what they're going to do, and it's basically along exactly the same lines that we want to go. So what we see this is progress being made.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulo.
Welcome to Jay Sekulo Live. This is Jordan Sekulo. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. The Ninth Circuit strikes again. This executive order, part of one of those three executive orders issued very early in the Trump administration. This one was issued on January 25th of 2017. Remember, these were three executive orders issued on the same day. One was about enhancing security, immigration security internally. One was about border security and the wall. And the third was about the travel issue, which is also being litigated in court. Well, now the interior, I'm holding in my hand for our Facebook and Periscope audience, the enhancing public safety in the interior of the United States. One provision, not the entire executive order, but one provision, but of course one that is the more controversial, especially for those liberal cities that don't want to comply with already existing federal law. Section 9 has been found unconstitutional by, guess what, a district court judge in California. What circuit does that fall under? The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. This is Section 9. Of the executive order enhancing public safety in the interior of the United States. And it says very clearly, it's the policy of the executive branch to ensure to the fullest extent of the law. Notice they cite the law. I've got that in my hand as well. 8 U.S. Code 1373. It's not just done through presidential power, but based off actual existing federal law, that a state or political subdivision of a state, here it was two cities, San Francisco and Santa Clara in Northern California, shall comply with 8 U.S.C. 1373. Oh, wow, you have to comply with the law, cities? And this is the section they didn't like, Section A. In furtherance of this policy, the Attorney General and the Secretary, in their discretion, and to the extent consistent with law, shall ensure the jurisdictions that willfully refuse to comply with 8 U.S.C. 1373. Those are sanctuary jurisdictions that fail to, as federal law mandates, inform Immigration and Naturalization Services who is there illegally. The federal government can request that of cities, and the cities are required to give that information to the federal government. And they're saying, this judge has said, no, you can't require them to do that because failure to require to do that cannot mean that they will not be eligible to receive federal grants, of course, except for grants deemed necessary for law enforcement. So no one is trying to gut even these sanctuary cities' ability to protect their citizens and the people in those cities, visitors as well. So this now has been held in effect. There's been a restraining order issued against this, similar to what we saw with the travel pause, I like to call it. Again, the Ninth Circuit and courts out of control, trying to prevent President Trump from, in this case, just enforcing existing, long existing U.S. law. I want to get your phone calls about this outrageous judicial activism. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We'll break it all down for you today on the broadcast at 1-800-684-3110. We're also going to get into North Korea. Healthcare is right on the line of getting agreement there as well. We'll talk about all of it today on Jay Sekulo Live. But give us a call. We want to talk to you. 1-800-684-3110. Go to aclj.org. A lot of information on all of these issues up at aclj.org. We'll be right back.
The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines defending your religious and constitutional freedoms. We engage the issues that matter most, whether it's fighting to protect Christians around the globe who are targeted simply because of their religious beliefs, or working to root out the corruption inside the Washington bureaucracy and hold those who are responsible accountable. The work of the American Center for Law and Justice is vital, and we could not do it without your generous support. Now you can play a key role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. For those of you on Facebook and Periscope, as you can see, I'm solo in the studio right now. Than Bennett's in very important meetings in Washington, D.C. The case of Andrew Brunson, Pastor Brunson, American pastor in prison in Turkey illegally since October. He's in meetings on that. My dad is out as well in meetings. So we are taking your phone calls. I'm going to be bringing in some of our experts to break down these issues, especially this one involving, if you're just joining us, a district court in the Northern Circuit of California, surprise, surprise, has an issue with a provision of a President Trump executive order, this time involving sanctuary cities and the federal government withholding funds to those sanctuary cities when they deem that the cities are not complying with 8 USC, so 8 U.S. Code 1373. What does that say? It's very clear. It just says that these cities, federal, state, local, federal, state, or local government entities or officials may not prohibit or any way restrict any government entity or official from sending to or receiving from the INS, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, information regarding the citizenship or immigration status, lawful or unlawful, of any individual. So again, you have an obligation to respond. The INS shall respond to any inquiry by federal, state, or local government agency so they can verify citizenship for people within, and vice versa, that these states have to give and local governments have got to give these information to the INS. So it works both ways. The INS helps the states, helps the cities verify people's citizenship status. But again, an executive order based on existing law, oh, that's not okay. That's unconstitutional. You can't punish these jurisdictions, sanctuary cities, if you want to call them that, who will willfully refuse. They're not just making mistakes. They are saying, we are going to be sanctuary cities. We are not going to comply with that section of the U.S. Code. And now they're going to court to say and tell the federal government for us that they can't withhold any money from us. And by the way, the Trump administration was still willing to pay for law enforcement services, those any funding that was received by those cities like San Francisco or Santa Clara. This is court shopping. They're going straight to the Ninth Circuit once again, and is why President Trump said this will likely be handled at the Supreme Court of the United States. Why? The Ninth Circuit is just an extension of these many of these district courts out west, which are very liberal and have shown an animus to the Trump administration. Get this, The judge in this case bundled, how much was it, Will? $200,000 for Barack Obama's campaign. Is that right? $200,000. A bundler in campaign world. These are the people who put together the big bucks. So the judge that ruled against this executive order, not just a liberal, not just a Obama supporter and voter. It's fine. He's allowed to do that as a judge. But a major economic contributor. I mean, that means he went to his friends, his family, his colleagues, and put together $200,000 for President Obama's reelection. And, of course, this is the judge that comes down against President Trump in this situation. Surprise, surprise. I mean, this is what it's like now dealing with our judiciary. I want to take some of your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. David wrote on Facebook, how is the judge able to do this? If block this executive order is just telling cities to follow the law. We're going to explain where his reasoning is. I mean, bizarrely, he says they must comply with the law. You know, he can't go so far and say they can't comply with the actual law. What he's saying is that the executive order that withdraws the funding, and see, that's different than what the law says. You've got to send us the info. What the law doesn't say is what happens if you don't. And that's why when you have these gray areas, Congress has acted, they've legislated, but you've left open the ability for the executive to, okay, take the law and execute it. There should be some penalties if you don't comply with this section of the law. And so that is where the judge has disagreed on that comment, David. Let's go to the phones as well at 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Dan in West Virginia on line one. Dan, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Yeah, thanks. I was just calling to ask, can't these judges that continually break the law by, and I say break the law because what they're doing is they're overstepping their...
Looks like we lost Dan. I mean, the question is, are they breaking the law? No. I mean, in this case, again, they have a judicial philosophy. These are again, are they going outside the realm of where normal judicial philosophy and legal analysis should be? I do believe that, but that's welcome to the Ninth Circuit and most of the district court judges out there. 1-800-684-3110. Sorry, we lost Dan there. Let's take a listen. This is Sean Spicer talking to Bill Himmer this morning about this case involving sanctuary cities. Take a listen.
Do you think the Ninth Circuit's got it in for the White House?
I don't know that they have it in for the White House. I think they have it in. They have a horrible record of interpreting the law, and that's just a fact.
That is a fact. I mean, they are not the most overturned circuit right now. In the last, but from 2010 to 2015, 79% of the Ninth Circuit cases, 79% were reversed by the Supreme Court. I mean, that is a pretty significant number. There may be a couple districts, again, that are even higher. But from that time period, which means in some of those years they likely were the highest, but if you do a little broader, when you look at those odds, it's pretty good for President Trump long-term in this battle. Here's how it hurts the country, though. It hurts the country because these laws then don't get enforced. These executive orders don't go into force, which means we've got to battle it out on how sanctuary cities can be stopped instead of them being stopped right now. So it draws the attention away to these long legal battles all the way likely up to the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll continue to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. This is not the only issue going on today. Obviously, there is a huge meeting at the White House with the entire U.S. Senate on North Korea. We will break some of that down for you in the second half of the broadcast. There's a healthcare update as well. We have heard, we've gotten some hints at what the new American Healthcare Act will include. For instance, a way for states to opt out entirely of the Obamacare subsidies and exchange programs. We'll explain that for you. That has brought already some Freedom Caucus members to actually by name say that they would support this new legislation so long as that text is there. And we've got an issue involving Turkey as well, bombing our allies in the fight against ISIS. They have been bombing now for 2 days in Iraq. And again, our troops work very closely with those allies. Thankfully, so far, none have been injured or killed in these bombings, but it's not outside the realm that they would be working together in or near the battlefield. And yet Turkey, following the vote there, which increased the president's power, Erdogan, they've got that situation. So we're going to get to all of those as well. But I think this sanctuary cities issue just highlights again, everybody likes to talk about the first 100 days. what you're up against is a reforming conservative, which I think is what Donald Trump is trying to do, big, bold action plans to take on problems in the U.S. And what are you up against as a president that wants to do that? Well, you're up against a very weaponized federal judiciary, almost you could say, against conservative positions who have just been chomping at the bit, because for 8 years, I think they were pretty bored. They've been chomping at the bit to get to any kind of new conservative thinking outside the box at all. In this case, it's just enforcing law. But again, this is too strong of an enforcement. We'll break that down for you more, but take some more of your phone calls as well. Let's go to Joy in Alabama on line three. Joy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, I just wanted to ask you, what do you think when this does get to the Supreme Court, because it's going to get there, what do you think the chances are of it being, the Ninth Circuit being overturned here?
I think on the Sanctuary Cities case, because again, it ties to existing law, very good. We'll talk about that with Harry Hutchinson as well. Because there is law on the books that allows the federal government to get this information. If you will not even give them the information, you are now directly violating a law, a mandate that is in U.S. code, and there can be penalties for that. And whether or not Congress should more quickly come up with what those penalties are and legislate them, I think that would be great if we didn't, if we had more Republicans in the U.S. Senate. But right now, that the margins are slim. I do feel pretty confident on the sanctuary cities this if this hit the Supreme Court. Now, on when you're talking about the travel pause, there's going to be so many different issues about mootness, about timing. And again, I still feel confident about that as well. But you see, we talk about these issues the day they come out, the day after they come out. I'm supposed to be on Fox Business later today to discuss this case, and my dad is as well. We'll talk about them, and then it kind of disappears for a month, and then it goes to the next level, and then it kind of disappears again. So that is why we have to, again, stay on it. But in this case, let me just remind everyone, the judge who decided it gave $200,000 to President Obama's reelection campaign. $200,000. Okay, so do you expect a fair trial when you've got judges this politicized at the district court in Ninth Circuit when you are Donald Trump or the Trump administration and Department of Justice attorneys? I don't think so. And that's an unfortunate about our federal judiciary at this time in our country. We're going to continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. Go to aclj.org. That's aclj.org. And we'll continue to update you on this and lots of issues now facing our country. That's at aclj.org. We'll be right back.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines defending your religious and constitutional freedoms. We engage the issues that matter most. Whether it's fighting to protect Christians around the globe who are targeted simply because of their religious beliefs, or working to root out the corruption inside the Washington bureaucracy and hold those who are responsible accountable. The work of the American Center for Law and Justice is vital, and we could not do it without your generous support. Now you can play a key role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
Everybody on radio, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. For those of you watching on Facebook and Periscope, click share now. Bring your friends and family into the discussion because we're going to break this down for you. Why, how did this federal judge, a district court judge, feel that it was the right thing legally, constitutionally, to issue a temporary restraining order? That's the first step in stopping a section of an executive order. So here's the bigger executive order. This was issued back in January 25th. It was part of those three executive orders to protect our country. This was the one that was about the interior of the United States. And the specific section at issue is short, Section 9, Subsection A, which is about complying with 8 U.S.C. 1373, which means that the governments, local, state, and federal have to communicate with each other about the citizenship status of their people living within their jurisdictions. So whether or not you're a city like Santa Clara and San Francisco who challenged this, and vice versa, that those cities can go to the INS and ask for information about their residents. So the cities who want to actually enforce laws on immigration, the federal government says in this law, come to us and we will provide you the information on these individuals if you don't have it. And Harry, what this executive order added was that if you don't comply with that, if you don't tell us the status of your citizens or who is in your city, we will withhold federal grants from you, except for those for law enforcement. It's like kind of like a government shutdown situation. We're not going to stop the law enforcement fundings. And the federal judge here at the district court level has said, no, you can't do that, President Trump.
Absolutely. So essentially, the judge reached his decision, not grounded in the text of the executive order. Instead, he relied on President Trump's campaign rhetoric, which is not part of the executive order. So clearly it strikes me that the judge's decision cannot be seen as defensible in any way.
Okay, and let's, just for everybody listening, we got a lot of calls on this, and folks, we're going to get to your calls. But let's just explain briefly, then we'll get a call. What was his reason? Like, what was his main takeaway about why the Trump administration did not have the power to do this?
Essentially, the county of San Francisco and Santa Clara County argued that the executive order was facially unconstitutional. They offered four bases. The ground on which the judge relied upon the most, essentially, is that state and local officials claimed that they were being coerced into enforcing existing federal law in violation of the 10th Amendment. So essentially, the judge agreed with that particular position, even though, in my opinion, the judge's decision was nonsensical for several reasons. First, the plaintiffs argued that billions of dollars were at stake with respect to this particular executive order. That's untrue. The executive order only threatened federal grant money. In addition, the statutory language associated with section, I think that's 1373, yep, already provides a basis for the federal government to enforce these rules.
And that would usually be the connection to be able to withhold finances, is that the courts have said, listen, the federal government can't just tell a state or a local government, do this or else. It's got to have some connection. And what here they've said is this connection is the funding. So we're providing you this funding, which is discretionary, these grants. So you're not going to be eligible for it. That would usually be the connecting point that would make not just the law, but then the action the executive branch wants to take constitutional. Is that, for instance, the reason why you have to be 21 to buy alcohol in the country was tied to highway bill funding. You may say, why? Well, they said, because of the safety issue of having people younger than 21 making decisions about drinking, how much to drink, and then driving. Or
particularly on federal,
yes,
funded interstate highways. Sorry.
Yes, and there were some states that said, no, we don't want to do that. And guess what? They didn't get money.
Yes.
And that's what they're saying here. They're not saying we're going to invade your city. They're saying you won't be eligible for these federal grants.
I think that's correct. Another thing about the judge's order that's outrageous, however, is that he made it a nationwide order, essentially, as I understand it, blocking the enforcement of the executive order throughout the United States, even though the plaintiffs in this case were two counties in California.
Yeah.
So again, I think that's outrageous.
But at the same time, the judge did acknowledge that there is statutory authority here. But how do you enforce the statute, Harry? When I read the statute, how do you enforce the statute without any kind of penalties or any kind of, again, what happens if you don't comply and tell the government, as the statute calls for, and you're supposed to tell them if you the citizenship status of people. If you don't comply, it doesn't say what happens. And I think that now this is an issue because of sanctuary cities who won't comply with that federal statute. Shouldn't there be penalties for that?
Absolutely. And so I would urge the Trump administration to go ahead and enforce the statutory language, because the statutory language has not been enjoined. This will probably spark another lawsuit on this particular issue. But it strikes me that the Trump administration has some statutory wiggle room to go ahead and enforce it. This will provoke another lawsuit. But ultimately, many of these cases, including the so-called travel ban case, will wind up before the United States Supreme Court. But I think President Trump is on sound constitutional and statutory grounds in seeking to enforce this executive order.
Yeah, I mean, is there a way to enforce that code without an executive order like this? Like, is there anything available to them? I mean, if it's not financial, they would just be saying you're not in compliance with what we're requesting. Is that just get messed in the bureaucratic back and forth?
Well, as I understand the approach offered by Attorney General Sessions, to the extent that we're dealing with grant funding,
yeah,
the Justice Department or the Department of Homeland Security could tell those particular counties or cities or other jurisdictions that they are not eligible for grant money. This would arguably trigger another lawsuit. And one of the disturbing trends in the United States today is the fact that we are basically operating the country through our judiciary. And that is a mistake.
Folks, just to remind you, this judge, William Orrick, he was, again, let's just go through his history very quickly. Appointed by President Obama in 2013. You know what he did in 2008? Gave President Obama $200,000. So again, when the media doesn't like some of the outrage Donald Trump has focused on these judges, it is, again, if you were, imagine you're going before these judges and this judge had given someone that so politically opposed to you, and the case was kind of politically charged, $200,000, six figures had raised, and then got the appointment to be the judge after putting together the money for the candidate. So again, he was a late appointment to the bench. So he's a pretty new judge in the sense. So this was, again, the second term, going to the second term of President Obama. I just want you to all understand that as we go into our first break in our first half hour. If you're holding on the line, we're going to get to your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. If you don't get the second half hour of the broadcast, broadcast to all of it at SiriusXM. Tell your local radio station to carry it. But also, you can watch us go inside the studio on Facebook and Periscope. We stay live through the breaks. That's through Facebook and Periscope and broadcast at ACLJ.org.
The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines defending your religious and constitutional freedoms. Now you can play a key role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at ACLJ.org. Thank you for your support.
back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We got some folks out today, but that's okay because we've got this new case now out of, surprise, surprise, District Court in Northern California. What circuit does that happen to be? Oh, yeah, that's the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which has been very unfavorable, to say the least, to President Trump. Now, it's not the travel pause, by the way, or the ban or whatever you want to call it, but it's an executive order that was issued on the same day, actually. This one involved the protecting the interior of the United States. So are people already inside the United States in here illegally, and Santa Clara, as well as not just Santa Clara, but San Francisco County in California. They didn't like this because they said, we're not going to comply with the U.S. code that says the federal government can ask us about the citizenship status of our residents, people in our jurisdictions. And so we're not going to comply with that, which because the federal government is saying that they will not allow us to apply for, be eligible for federal grants, except for the ones deemed necessary for law enforcement. So, again, not trying to stop law enforcement from being funded, but other federal grants, well, we're not going to comply because we believe this is unconstitutional and wrong. And they challenged this, and surprise, surprise, a judge who gave $200,000 to President Obama in 2008 and then got appointed to this judgeship in 2012 has ruled against the Trump administration. As President Trump has said, he will fight this all the way to the Supreme Court. I think he has a much better chance there at the U.S. Supreme Court than he will even at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, because that circuit kind of mirrors a lot of these district court judges. You can always be surprised, but maybe in the Ninth Circuit, that's 15% of the time or less that you get surprised at the circuit court level. Let's go right to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. If you want to talk to us on air, that's 1-800-684-3110. Pete is calling in from Connecticut on line 5. Pete, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Jordan. Hey, Pete. First-time caller. I love your guys' show. You guys do great things. As a conservative living in Connecticut, which is predominantly liberal,
sure.
I sit here and I ponder the idea that, how is it that these judges have more power than the President of the United States? And more importantly, who gives them the ability to not necessarily follow the laws and challenge them, which has been set forth by presidents, by other presidents, in regards to the travel pause?
Well, I mean, for a very long time now, courts have had this review power. I mean, Harry, this dates back a couple hundred years plus, Marbury versus Madison, where courts gave themselves the ability to basically review any kind of actions by the legislator or legislative and executive branch. Now, when it comes to the executive branch, oftentimes they've been less likely to intervene, but on more recently, sometimes in a good way. I mean, there were some of these executive orders by President Obama that were totally unconstitutional. So it's not that we're against courts ever reviewing actions by the president taken outside the normal legislative process, which is what executive orders are. Oftentimes they are challenged in court. What we're seeing here, though, is some of the more mundane. I mean, yes, it sounds politically charged because we talk here about sanctuary cities. But the truth is, they have a code. So, again, you look at these rules of executive orders and presidential power. You're basing it on existing law, and you're trying to enforce that existing law. That's a strong case for the U.S. Department of Justice. Now, I want to remind people, the deputy AG for Jeff Sessions just got formally confirmed. So he's just now got a full deputy, deputy attorney general. So a lot of this is because it's being handled by the bureaucracy still. I'm not always sure that they're putting their best foot forward on these Trump policies. I would question that if I was in the Trump administration.
Absolutely. And so I think there are two things going on. First, you have to look at the bureaucrats who are charged with enforcing President Trump's policies. Number two, you also have to look at the judiciary, which continues to look to extra-constitutional ideas, goals, and objectives in interpreting the law. So in this particular case, the judge places a paramount claim on state law. So he argues essentially that federal law is in conflict with state law or county rules protecting illegal immigrants.
So, folks, again, you look at that. We're going to take your phone calls when we get back. 1-800-684-3110. There's a lot to discuss.
The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines defending your religious and constitutional freedoms. We engage the issues that matter most, whether it's fighting to protect Christians around the globe who are targeted simply because of their religious beliefs, or working to root out the corruption inside the Washington bureaucracy and hold those who are responsible accountable. The work of the American Center for Law and Justice is vital, and we could not do it without your generous support. Now you can play a key role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Before I jump right back into Sanctuary Cities here with Harry Hutchinson, we're going to take your phone calls as well because the questions are great. Just in case we don't get to it today, let's not forget that the entire U.S. Senate has been invited to the White House this afternoon for a closed-door briefing on North Korea. I mean, this is very serious, somewhat unprecedented to have the briefing at the White House, and I think very serious. Some Democrats are trying to say, oh, this is about the first 100 days and photo ops. I don't think you waste your time at this point. President Trump is not that type of person to do a photo op and deal with a lot of people on the other side of the aisle who have been very opposed to his most of his domestic plans, unless this was very serious. And so we've also got Secretary Tillerson will be chairing the UN Security Council for the United States. That is rare. That'll be happening later this week on the North Korea issue. Usually the Secretary of State has the ambassador to the UN, that's Nikki Haley, handling that. But it sends a strong signal about how serious you're taking it when you bring your Secretary of State in. And, of course, the health care and the government shutdown looming. It seems like, you know, that there will get short-term continuations on funding until there can likely be a vote on health care. There are already Republicans who are members of the Freedom Caucus that voted no on the American Health Care Act once who are now saying they will vote yes. If we don't get into all of that today, we still have got time to get into that and brief you on it tomorrow. Let's get to the phone calls now, though. Let's go to Victor in Staten Island, New York, online too. Hey, Victor, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Jordan. Hey, guys. Listen, I see this, listening to you guys, how you laid this out very clearly with the judges. This is how I see it, and I have a question. It seems to be twofold, the problem here with the judges, and it's very, very serious, more than we realize. One is a self-governance problem with the judges. And the second fact is the politicizing of their positions, of their judicial part. I see that they're both either intentionally corrupted or they're subconsciously corrupting their own positions, which entail, you know, will affect every decision that's made.
Well, I think, Victor, here's the issue, and I'll go to Harry on this. I think, Harry, it becomes a sad day in the court systems, especially in the federal court systems, when you can go through the open information available, look up where judges are politically and see if they've been active in politics, and basically look at a whole host of cases, and based on that, you can prejudge where they'll come down, and they would be at, you know, be about 99.9% correct every time, especially in someone like in this judge's case who ruled against the sanctuary cities portion of the executive order, the enforcement section. In this judge's case, when you say, oh, he gave $200,000 to President Obama before he got his his judgeship. This is somebody who is likely almost 99.9% coming down against President Trump on something like this. I mean, that's a sad day, though.
Absolutely. So what we have is a sophisticated form of forum shopping. And one of the ways of addressing this issue long term is by depriving district courts of jurisdiction, perhaps over immigration. It will not necessarily help in this particular case, but long term, Congress needs to think about depriving district courts of authority. Here we have a district court judge appointed by President Obama after giving President Obama lots of money, and he's inclined to support President Obama's interpretation of the U.S. Constitution, meaning that the Constitution is a living document as opposed to a document that is bound by its original text. That is the essential issue.
Yeah, so right there, folks, Harry brought up something we all should remember, is that Congress does set the jurisdiction for these courts. It's only the Supreme Court is directly mentioned in the Constitution. Outside of the Supreme Court, and they have pretty limited jurisdiction, outside of that, you've got, then it just says basically in any other, you know, courts you set up. And through those courts, you can say, okay, what can they hear? What can they not hear? What are we going to allow? You do that by law. You don't have to amend the Constitution to do that. You just do that through regular legislation. As Harry said, maybe a time for a good hard look at that when you've got such politicized courts going on. We got a comment coming on Facebook. What does the Attorney General – let's see, make sure we get the person's name who wrote the comment in, if I can still pull that up. If not, sorry about that. But you ask a great question. You said, what does the Attorney General have to do with this? Well, the Attorney General is fighting this out in court. It's his Department of Justice attorneys. I have an asterisk there, though, because his Department of Justice attorneys right now are the bureaucrats. Most of them holdovers from at least the Obama administration, maybe going back even further. So some may be more conservative, some may be more liberal. They also may just not have a lot of fervor to fight this out zealously. I mean, I think that's the big issue, Harry.
I think you're absolutely right, Jordan. And one of the background issues is the failure of the Trump administration to fill every vacancy at every cabinet level. And there are vacancies in the Justice Department and the State Department. They need to be filled with individuals who are willing to enforce the rule of law and the Constitution. And to the extent that there are any openings out there, the Trump administration needs to move quickly to fill them.
Yeah, let's go to Tim calling in on from Maryland on line 3. Tim, welcome to JCKO Live. Hey, Tim.
Great job, buddy.
Hey, Tim, we got some noise, so if you could just ask your question quick and loudly. You there?
I'm here.
Okay, go. It's a little bit. Just go ahead with your question, Tim.
Okay, here's my question. It seems to me that these liberal judges are almost trying to legislate from the bench, but what I'm wondering is, couldn't a conservative judge do a preemptive strike to, you know, think tank and say, okay, what can we do to prevent this kind of thing happening in these various scenarios and block their attempts to block our president?
I mean, a judge is not usually going to go out ahead. So the lawsuits, who's filing the lawsuit here? Well, the lawsuit is being filed by those who oppose the executive order, and they're filing in jurisdictions, as President Trump called it, their forum shopping, their court shopping, their judge shopping. They're filing in places they know. Hey, these are the guys who are giving $200,000 to President Obama. This is the kind of judge we want this before. I mean, that's the problem, is that they're not going to be filing in the place where it's more likely than not that they're going to have someone like Judge Gorsuch, who's now a Supreme Court justice, him looking at it.
Absolutely. And so I think the background issue is whether or not the federal government can get declaratory judgments in support of their policy. I think that's unlikely. I'm certainly no expert on civil procedure, but certainly at the state court level, for instance, you can pursue declaratory judgments. I think that's what the caller is talking about, but I think that would be quite difficult.
Yeah. All right. Back to the phones. We go. A lot of calls have been coming in. You could go, let's go to Wendy in California. I mean, feeling it out there on the West Coast. Wendy, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thanks. Yes, it's incredibly frustrating. And several years back in California, citizens are allowed to sign petitions to get a ballot on the a measure or a proposition on the state ballot. We did that to refuse funding for hospitals and free schooling, and it passed. The people of California said no, mm-hmm. and the ninth district judge turned around and invalidated the entire state citizenry's vote, so it doesn't surprise me what they're doing. And then I had a question, why doesn't Trump replace some of these, put some time aside and replace some of these really contentious judges right away?
Well, you can't just replace these judges. They have, even at the district court and circuit court level, they are lifetime appointments. Now, there are a lot of vacancies.
Absolutely. Harry.
Now, you could have a whole show about Trump vacancies in the federal government and trying to get those filled. I mean, he's just gotten his first circuit court level, so right below the Supreme Court, him going through the process. I think that's been complete. The district court nominees usually are not as controversial and can be done much quicker, but at a divided Senate, you know, they're just not rushing anything for President Trump. The Democrats are slow walking and using any procedure they can to do that.
I think that's absolutely correct, Jordan. At the same time, I would urge the president to fill every vacancy at the district court level and at the court of appeals level. One of the big issues that's out there, President Trump cannot solve it on his own, but one of the big issues is something called judicial usurpation. Essentially, we have a judicial dictatorship in some cases overriding the will of the people. We can reduce the probability of judicial usurpation going forward by increasing the number of judges who are committed to the rule of law and the text of the Constitution.
And you got to take advantage because we have a time period here. It may only be a few more years. And you never know what's going to happen in the House or the Senate. I mean, if I were them, I would have had 100 district court nominee and circuit court nominees ready to go.
Absolutely.
Flood the U.S. Senate with it. And that's how you get some change going on in all of these circuits and other circuits that will step in as well. When we get back, we'll continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We'll continue to talk about this, but I do want to get into some of the issues, North Korea, Turkey as well, the bombing of our allies in Iraq by a NATO ally, Turkey. We've got our government affairs director out in meetings because of an American pastor imprisoned in Turkey, Andrew Brunson, as well as this, again, an update on domestic policy for all of us, the healthcare policy. So we'll get into that as well when we come back.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines defending your religious and constitutional freedoms. We engage the issues that matter most. Whether it's fighting to protect Christians around the globe who are targeted simply because of their religious beliefs, or working to root out the corruption inside the Washington bureaucracy and hold those who are responsible accountable. The work of the American Center for Law and Justice is vital, and we could not do it without your generous support. Now you can play a key role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-877-877. 989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
All right, folks, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Before we get into the Sanctuary Cities issue once again, I want to get an update for everybody on a few foreign policy issues. First, let me just tell you, we are already getting word on the healthcare issue that there are Freedom Caucus members. These are Republicans that voted no, were going to vote no the first time on the American Healthcare Act. There was never even a vote there, who have already come out by name. Congressman Bratt out of Virginia, he has already announced now that with the changes being made, and it's the state's ability to opt out of specific programs of the Affordable Care Act, that that would be enough for him to vote yes. So we are certainly getting closer on health care. But that's about, you know, so they've issued, they released some of the basics on health care. Most of those involved, again, the opting out, the state's ability to opt out of these plans. And again, phase one of getting away, doing away with Obamacare. So we're going to continue to watch that very closely. But there's also a lot happening on the foreign policy front. I want to go to a retired Colonel Wes Smith, our military analyst at on Jay Sekulow Live, because Wes, one huge meeting on North Korea today, literally, because the entire U.S. Senate at the White House to be briefed on North Korea. And there's a lot of speculation about how serious is this. There have been some on the left said, oh, this is optics because the 100 days. I tend to believe that the president's doing this at the White House and bringing all 100 U.S. senators there, they don't want to make it easy for them to come out and say that about the meeting. So it's got to be fairly serious.
I think it is. I think the seriousness is also, you know, borne out by the fact that Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, is actually hosting this briefing along with Jim Mattis, the Secretary of Defense. Those are two gentlemen that are not much into photo ops. So I suspect that they will be briefing them on the latest issues surrounding North Korea. I'm sure there are intelligence reports about North Korea's military that the public is not aware of, that they will make the Senate aware of. But it continues to be a very dangerous situation. North Korean media just today announced to their people that all of our forces there, which are in a joint exercise full eagle with our other partners in the region, that we are preparing an invasion of North Korea, they are telling their people. And they're saying that they're going to launch a preemptive strike against U.S. forces in order to stop this. So it's really a powder keg. I think a lot of what North Korea is saying is probably not, it's serious, but I don't think they will do it. I think there's a lot of hyperbole and posturing on the part of Kim Jong-un. But at the same time, we have to take it seriously. And, you know, a mistake, a miscalculation at a lower level in the North Korean military can end up launching an all-out war, which would be very, very tragic.
And then on this other issue, and then we'll get back into healthcare. I know people have got questions about, the sanctuary cities issue. But also Turkey, a NATO ally bombing a group they consider our enemies, but they are a NATO ally. They're bombing groups of Kurds, the Peshmerga forces that we work with, in the battle against ISIS, and they've unleashed now 2 days of bombings against our allies there.
Right. They started yesterday with two attacks on the People's Protection Units and the Peshmerga, which are allies of the United States. They're also allies of the coalition to defeat ISIS there. And they not only launched these strikes, and by the way, Turkey does not like the Kurds. There is one Kurdish group, the PKK, that is technically a terrorist group, but Turkey takes all Kurdish people and all Kurdish forces and lumps them in together, and they are against the Kurds. They fear an independent Kurdish state on the southern border of Turkey. And so yesterday they launched two attacks against Kurdish forces that are really our allies. We actually have some special forces embedded with Kurdish units. And then they launched another attack a few hours ago. They did this, however, Jordan, without notifying the United States or our allies. And so it was a very dangerous thing to do because we have ground troops there. Also, we try to deconflict the airspace so that we don't have air incidents where we run into each other or fire on each other. So Turkey, a member of NATO, supposedly our ally, not only bombed Kurdish forces that have been really effective and heroic in the fight against ISIS, but they did it without notifying us. which is an extremely careless thing to do in light of the fact that there are so many different nations in that region.
You know, again, we're going to continue to update you on these security matters. And obviously, whatever we know and find out that comes out of this North Korea meeting with the entire U.S. Senate at the White House, we'll update you on that on tomorrow's broadcast. We'll keep watching into the Turkey situation. Like we were talking about the Russian plane, you know, you do this, and we got no warning on this issue. If there were U.S. special forces there on the ground and they got bombed by Turkey, I mean, you want to talk about a diplomatic and military crisis, that would be one. That would certainly be one. And of course, we're representing an American pastor imprisoned in Turkey right now. So, we're going to update you on all of this. But calls coming in on, of course, the Sanctuary City ruling. And out of California, how can I not go to you first? Peggy in California, online for Peggy. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Jordan. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. A couple of little tiny points here. Is one, I wanted to find out, since you had stated that Congress is in charge of the judges and Congress also makes law, isn't there a way that, Congress can make a law so that judges, police departments, mayors, things of that nature can take compliance testing every year, working for a bank and a corporate office for many, many years?
Yep.
Every single year we had to take compliance tests. It's like 40 or 50 different modules from fraud, money laundering, you know, all of the different regulations, banking regulations, people, groups,
I got
different
you.
Things of that nature.
I mean, it sounds like a very good idea. The issue is they have lifetime appointments. The where you really go after them is what jurisdiction they have. What are they even able to decide on? That's one thing. I mean, Harry, compliance, this would also get extremely complicated. What does that mean? Because yes, they can all look at the same law and give you 15 different opinions on it.
Absolutely. And compliance might mean one thing under a Trump administration and another thing under, for instance, the Obama administration.
Yeah, I don't think we want that.
And so the only check on lifetime appointees is impeachment. That's a long, difficult, and arduous process. And that is unlikely to be terribly effective. I think limiting the jurisdiction of the courts is a better idea.
Yeah. Now, Bobby has an interesting call, and I think this just to explain how this legal process works in the federal courts. Bobby in Ohio on line 6. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Yeah. Hello. This is just kind of gets me. How is it that a judge can claim that the executive order needs stopped in his district, in his area, and claim it does something against their economics there, and it still affects my state?
Yeah. Well, Harry, explain this, but this is a power that these federal court district judges have, especially in cases that are new. So this is not, again, something that they are the first person to rule on. They can issue these nationwide
absolutely
injunctions or temporary restraining orders on the enforcement of this anywhere, up to a point. I mean, this doesn't last long usually for the district court, but they can start that way.
Absolutely. So essentially, once the judge rules that the executive order is unconstitutional, arguably that means it's unconstitutional everywhere, and then the judge takes jurisdiction over the entire nation and issues essentially a blanket order.
Again, folks, this is definitely going to be appealed. President Trump's already talking about Supreme Court. He's probably correct, because the Ninth Circuit, I'd say it's at 90% chance that they're not going to be real successful there. You never know. You still fight it out. They will. And we'll also look at how we can weigh in as well. And of course, these international issues we're going to keep an eye on very closely over the next 24 hours when we talk to you again on Jay Sekulow Live.
The American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines defending your religious and constitutional freedoms. Now you can play a key role in supporting the work of the ACLJ. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org.